This is WABF. It's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highways 90 and 98 and in Malbus on 181. And now, Dr. Lou.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Great. Loving this
weather. Isn't it nice to be dry?
Yes, it is.
And of course, we are going to be complaining bitterly in the middle of the summer when there's a drought. Okay.
Yes, so we will.
we cannot be satisfied. There's no question about that. All right, folks. Look, we've got a lot to do this morning. I've got Senator Elliott coming on at 10:10. So, and I know he's got a full schedule. So I want to try to get as much into this as possible. Before I get to Senator Elliott, I wanted to try to cover two things nationally before we get on with our discussion about the legislative session and what's going on with it. All right, one of them was this whole movement toward defending the police and what is going on with that. And then the second one is a foreign policy question about Biden's attempt to try to move in the direction of just pulling out of Afghanistan. And to be honest with you, the long and the short of the first part of this is defunding the police is simply an argument that the Black Lives Matter people have been making for a long time. And the argument falls on deaf ears within the black community because the black community is going to be most adversely affected by any attempt to curtail policing in those communities. I mean, you just listen to some of the black leaders that are around, whether in Brooklyn, New York, whether it's in Chicago. These folks understand that the thin blue line is the only thing that's protecting their communities from these criminal gangs. And I mean, one would think that the mayors of places like Chicago and New York would be focusing on breaking the gangs, not breaking the communities by defunding the police. I mean, what sense does it make to just turn over, you know, give a free rein to the gangs? It makes no sense to me, but evidently that's what Black Lives Matter wants to do, and one has to seriously say no to this. And I think we need to fight harder to say no to it and make sure that people in the black community understand that all of us have a stake in this. And I think that's an aspect of this we need to kind of take a look at. The other thing, too, has to do with this whole question of Biden and his foreign policy approach. Look, the first thing that he did was try to get us back into the nuke deal with the Iranians, okay, which is a major mistake. But nevertheless, he's doing that. Then, of course, they wanted to rejoin the Human Rights Commission in the UN, which is another major mistake. And then, of course, they want to get us back into the Paris Accords, which is another major mistake. Okay. But nevertheless, you know, you can probably live with some of that. But what you can't live with is doing exactly what Obama did in 2011 when he pulled out of Iraq and essentially gave ISIS the opportunity to grow and develop and turn itself into a caliphate, which, guess what? Brought terrorism to the United States and to Europe. Now you say, well, that's Iraq and this is Afghanistan and that can't happen. Let me just suggest to you something. What Trump was trying to do was, yes, extract himself from Iraq, from Afghanistan. Got it. But he made the point there had to be conditions that were going to be met in order for us to extract ourselves. Those conditions had not been met. And those conditions will not be met under Biden's approach to this. He's just pulling out. So you say, well, the threat is different from Iraq. No, no, no. You've got Al-Qaeda and ISIS in Afghanistan. And think back until the mid-90s. Al-Qaeda was able to support terror groups in Chechnya from Afghanistan. They sent arms. They sent trainers. They sent fighters to do exactly that. And of course, it was in Afghanistan where 9/11 was planned. So let's be clear. We don't need to give Al-Qaeda and ISIS a safe haven. Uncle Joe, kind of think about that, maybe, if you are thinking. So at any rate, that's what I really needed to kind of talk to you about you know, as far as those two points, right? So I think that Senator Elliott will be calling in a minute, and I think it's going to be important for us to kind of, you know, have a good talk with Senator Elliott, because, I mean, there is so much going on with what is going on in the legislation that's taking place up there, that it's difficult to stay on top of it. And so I'm hoping that with his discussion with all of this, we'll have an opportunity to have a better sense of where we are with this, so that you can have an opportunity to talk to your legislators and get them to move in the right direction on things. So, okay, Senator Elliott's on the line. Good morning, Senator Elliott.
And we have you on now, Chris.
Thanks, Lori.
Good morning.
Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
Man, I am doing great. How are you doing, sir?
Not too bad. I did introduce you as Senator Elliott, then Lori went, oh, hi, Chris.
Well,
so
we're informal. Just transferring handheld to speaker, and he couldn't hear you.
Chris, I was just saying to the audience that there's so much going on in Montgomery that it's important for us to have someone like yourself who is in the middle of all this to kind of help us sort out some of these issues. So I know in my text to you, I said I wanted you to just try to tell us, you know, what's coming up that's important for you, and then maybe we can talk about a few other things. So do you want to do that, or do you want to just give us an overview of your sense of how successful this has been first? What do you want to do?
Well, let's talk about a couple of your key issues. You know, you had mentioned several different bills, all of which have to do with limiting the governor's emergency powers and authorities and putting some checks and balances in place, which I think is certainly warranted. All of those are being fought pretty hard by the governor's office, as you may expect. Senator Wiley's bill has gotten out of the Senate and gotten down to the House, where it is being obstructed by the governor's office and her folks. The same is true with Representative Norgren's bill that allows the legislature to call itself back into session. Again, that's an incredibly high bar, you know, a supermajority in both houses to really ratify that we need to be in session. So it would only be used in the most emergent of situations.
Right.
But that,
Chris,
one, too,
Can we identify the bill, like the first one you mentioned is it's 97, right, the Whatley bill?
Correct.
And then the second is SB 259.
If I remember correctly, Barfoot's companion to Representative Norgren's bill, you know, that we just talked about. That one, again, is being held up by the governor's office. So, you know, any types of attempts like that are meeting pretty heavy resistance and are, you know, we're trying to push on. But
can I ask you just a quick question on this? When you say that the governor's office is holding them up, what exactly are they doing that we can help these bills move along if we can find out, you know, how to do that?
Well, you can imagine, I'm sure, that especially with House members, you've got, you know, the governor's office saying, hey, you got this, you know, project in your district, or you've got this going on. I mean, she's clearly, you know, not afraid of flexing, and sometimes that gets to individual members, and they decide not to move a bill that otherwise they would have moved.
Right. Okay. So that's traditional blackmail.
That's not unusual. The last one you mentioned was Senate Bill 290. It's Senator Albritton's legislation, and that one deals with prohibitions on the governor and executive agencies entering into public contracts without approval from the legislature. That unfortunately doesn't deal with anything in the past, such as this abomination of a prison program, but only future stuff. So we're looking at that right now, and boy,
right.
I don't know, Lou, if you haven't taken the time to look through this mess of a prison construction program, it's not pretty, not at all. And we haven't been able to get any details out of it except for an embargoed copy of an investor presentation that CoreCivic made to potential investors, and it is really something.
Well, I know that you've always been opposed to this, but let me just ask you this. I know that there was talk about having a lawsuit going forward along the lines of overreach of executive authority. Is there anything on that you've heard of?
You know, I think there may be some civic organizations, you know, consumer advocacy groups, taxpayer
right.
advocacy groups that get into that. I don't think the legislature is going to sue the governor. I mean, our remedy is pass a law And I think that's what Senator Albritton's trying to do here.
Right.
You know, asking the judiciary to get into, you know, the middle between the governor and the legislature is really not a good idea in my estimation. Now, certainly from a taxpayer standpoint, that's appropriate. But what the legislature needs to do is pass Senator Albritton's law, pass a prison bond issue, which I hope to do in the waning days of the legislature here, to show the governor, hey, you know, interest rates are incredibly low. Let's take advantage of them and let's build these prisons on our own as opposed to what she's got right now.
Well, I mean, this bond issue question, are you getting a lot of support to do that?
Quietly, yes. The key there, and again, with only about 7 days, legislative days, it equates to about 3 weeks, you know, plus one.
Right.
With only 7 legislative days left, we really got to make sure you've got all the support lined up and ready to go. But that is still a conversation that's happening, and I would not be surprised to see that move in the next, you know, week or so.
What's the number?
And once that happens, you know, you're going to have a key funding source right there and ready, and the legislature will have taken action.
Right.
One of the things I've advocated for some time, instead of this P3 project that she's looking at right now, and I'll email you the details on this, and
okay.
You've got them as well. They're really pretty troublesome.
What's your bill number on the funding question?
It's not been introduced yet.
Oh, it hasn't
been.
Okay.
Assigned a bill number yet.
Okay.
Chris, the governor also announced that she's launching a public-private partnership to protect and enhance Alabama's 21 state parks. What do you know about that?
Well, you know, I'm in favor of a bond issue for state parks. The current bond issue that they have had out there is getting paid off, essentially. We've repaid that debt. Our state parks need upgrades, and I think that's a great thing. But this governor loves some public-private partnerships. Laura, you'll recall that was the direction they were trying to go with the I-10 bridge before many of us objected to that. So, you know, it's concerning, again, that here we go down a public-private partnership path. And the problem is these contracts are written, these agreements are written, and we're seeing this in the core civic proposal for the prisons, to heavily favor the private industry over the government and the taxpayers, and that is very concerning to me.
Well, Chris, you know, that certainly is the case with this. Now, let me just ask you, since before I know you've got a busy schedule, what is your sense of one of the bills that I've heard about? It's basically a sanctuary state protection of the Constitution Amendment, and it seems like, if I'm not mistaken, it was a Senate bill, but it could be a House bill. Do you have a sense of that one?
Yeah, Lou, I'm not exactly sure which one you're talking about. I know we passed a bill that Senator Allen had regarding the Second Amendment. And
that's it. It's the Allen bill.
Prohibiting law enforcement officers from enforcing federal gun laws, and I think that passed
I think
overwhelmingly
it's,
out of the Senate, goes to the House.
Okay, so that was SB.
What you're talking about, that measure seems a little broader, and I'm not familiar with that
this,
one, unfortunately.
The one I was talking about is SB 358. I just saw it on my notes. So, but you say that's gone to the House. Have you heard anything about that over there from some of your friends in the House?
I have not. I hope that you know moves quickly. I mean, obviously we've put the work in on it upstairs, Senator Allen's bill. It is in committee down in the House, and hopefully they will they'll get to it here shortly. You know, we're running out of time, so they're going to have to move it pretty quickly.
Well, do you know any of the committee members in the House who are on that committee to assist you with that one?
It's going to be on public safety and homeland security. The good news is there are a lot of law enforcement officers on that committee. I don't have the committee list.
Yeah.
The House has got so many different committees than we do. I'm trying to look it up here real quick. Alan Treadway, who was the former deputy police chief in Birmingham, is on there, and you see a couple other law enforcement folks that are on that as well.
Right.
Philip Pettis, Rex Reynolds, Proncy Robertson, Connie Rowe, Shane Stringer, all law enforcement folks.
Okay.
So they should be interested in moving that. And then, of course, locally here, Representative Harry Shivers on that committee as well.
Okay. Well, that's something that we can send an action alert out and ask people to call and get perhaps get some movement on that. Okay?
They should. They definitely should.
This gaming bill. You've been on here before, and I know that you've said that, you know, you wanted to try to get a clean bill. Well, it seems like if I have this right, I know there's SB 319 is the McClendon gaming bill. That seems to be a clean one. But then you've got two bills, I think by Marsh, this SB 309, then the 310 and the 311, which are constitutional amendments. I mean, it's kind of confusing, but just can you cut to the chase on that and give us an idea of what you think we should be doing so that we can support something?
Well, you know, here's the question, okay? What I did was work to pass comprehensive gaming legislation. I voted no on what Senator Marsh had. I did not think it was a good deal for the people of the state of Alabama. But my job and what I see my job is to negotiate the best deal for the taxpayers that could actually pass the Senate and that would actually get on the ballot so that y'all could have an opportunity to vote for it. Lou, I'm not thrilled with this package. I just know that it's the best one that could pass, and I held out and got some measure of, you know, free market principles in there, competitive bidding, et cetera,
right,
so that we could, if we're going to go down this route, make sure that the taxpayers got the best deal out of it that they could.
Right.
What I saw in Senator Marsh's bill seemed to be a negotiated deal between the players and the state.
Exactly.
And at all.
Yeah.
I'm not thrilled with the concept of casinos and full-fledged casinos in the state of Alabama, but that's one of those things I'm going to leave up to the voters. My job was just to negotiate the best deal possible and put it out there for folks to look at.
Okay, well, let me ask you then about McClendon's SB 319. Is that more along the lines of what you were looking for in terms of a lottery bill?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a standalone lottery bill would have been what I would prefer, and then if you wanted to have a standalone gaming, constitutional amendment, that would have been fine, too. I really liked what we came out with on 319, Senator McClendon's lottery bill, because I attached an amendment on it, Lou, you'll like this, to get rid of the grocery tax. So it ended up, instead of just being, $400 million worth of lottery revenue, it ended up being $400 million tax cut to the folks, the hardworking folks in Alabama, but that did not move forward, and you'd be surprised at the menagerie of people who like the grocery tax here in Alabama.
Oh, well, that's discouraging to hear. I mean, so you really think that the McClendon bill is dead no matter what?
I really do. I think with the substitution that's taken place of the comprehensive bill, and in all fairness, that was the only thing that was going to pass the Senate was a comprehensive bill. That's what the governor has been advocating, is a comprehensive bill. And we do have gaming all across the state right now. I mean, there is some merit in the argument that we've got to get control over what we've got right now. So this bill does that with the competitive nature put in there, the free market principles put in there that I've advocated, and that they listened to after it failing once before. I feel better with it, and I feel like we've negotiated the best deal possible for the people of the state. Now it's up to them to decide whether or not they want to move forward with casino gambling in Alabama and a lottery.
Okay. Let me ask you about this is a bill that what's his name down in South Baldwin, Representative, I'm losing his name right now. It's HB 570. It has to do with the delegation has to work on this first, and it's transferring some of the tax money from the 1975 tax law to Gulf Shores schools. So have you come across that yet, or is that something that's only in the House right now and hasn't come to you?
It's still in the House. It has not come up to the Senate. I'll be honest with you, I don't expect for it to make it out of the House local legislative delegation committee down there. If it does, we'll see, but it has not even made it out of the own House committee. And just so your listeners and y'all know how this works, that committee is made up only of local House members, so that's our local Baldwin County House members, but I don't think there's even support for it within the local committee to move it. So and until that happens, I'm not going to get too involved in it, and we'll wait and see what the House can chew on down there.
Okay, let me just ask you this, because there's this ongoing question about does if you get this bill and it comes out of the House and I think there's five members, if I'm not mistaken, and they pass it on, say, a 3-2 vote, you have to vote on it, and so does Alberton. Now, if you two vote against it, then it doesn't pass, or is there a supermajority necessary to pass it? What exactly is your understanding of that?
Both senators must sign the bill in order for it to move out of committee. And if either Senator Albritton or I do not sign it or not in favor of it, it will not move.
Okay. So what's your sense of this, though? I mean, are you pretty much opposed to it?
I don't think we'll see it.
Okay. I'll let you go on this one, Chris. You know, I think it's one of these things where, and I think you're right that you're not going to see it, but I think it would be, you know, an interesting question as to, you know, why this is coming about now and the degree to which I know some of the state, the Board of Education people down here are concerned that, you know, there an agreement was made to Gulf Shores and that agreement needs to be taken care of. And perhaps they'll just let this thing go to court if necessary. But, you know, I do think conceptually it does make sense for Gulf Shores eventually to be able to plug into, you know, school tax money. I just think that since they made that agreement to begin with, then they need to stick with it until further action is necessary, I would think, you know. But
well, and I'm not sure court's the right way to go on there. Again, you know, I think a judge is going to look at it and say, this is a legislative act. It clearly spells out where the money goes. If you want the legislature to change it, then that's your remedy. And, you know, clearly the legislature, at least so far in the House, has not shown any interest in actually right. making a change. So I'm not sure a lawsuit is a effective use of anybody's time. I do think at some point, you know, in the future, this is something we need to address. But I would agree with you that we may be a little premature on that right now. It does
right.
not seem that enough of those discussions have taken place to move what Representative McMillan is trying to do right now.
Okay. Tell me quickly about your SB 8 and SB 107. First one was an HOA flag thing, which I think is an excellent idea that they can't arbitrarily say no to flags. And SB 107, I know that you've been trying to get that through. That's your police jurisdiction bill. Can you just explain both of those real quick?
Sure. We'll start with 8. It's a pretty simple one. Homeowners associations cannot prohibit the display of the United States flag. They can put some restrictions on it, say, hey, listen, it's got to be attached to your house, or it can't be, you know, the size of the one out in front of, you know, Camping
yeah.
World or whatever.
Right.
But you still got to be able to fly the United States flag if you want to. What SBA does is it essentially say the same thing for the Alabama flag. You want to fly the Alabama flag, you can't have a homeowners association tell you you can't. And it really stemmed out of the bicentennial celebration. We spent a lot of time handing kids and people all over the state and in my district a lot these Alabama flags, which they went and flew on the front of their house, and then all of a sudden the homeowners association told them they couldn't. And I just thought it was pretty ridiculous. So
yeah.
Hopefully we can get that through. It's passed the Senate. It's down in the House. It's out of House committee, so it's just waiting its turn on the floor. I hope that happens in the next week or two, and we'll get
okay.
that one to the governor to sign. The next one is Senate Bill 107. This is, of course, something you're well aware of. We've been working on this for 3 years. You know, listen, the largest impact of government on people is at the local level. And what you can and can't do with your property, of course, you know I'm a big fan of private property rights and work hard to try to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
107 does is basically say, look, if you're taxing and policing and regulating somebody that can't vote for you, we probably need to change that. And that's what 107 does over time. It will reduce police jurisdictions as a municipality grows into them. They can't continue to expand them. And from a planning standpoint in particular, it tries to get that back on the right side of things, where the folks that are doing the planning are the folks you get to vote for. And those are your county commissioners in most instances. Right now we've got cities across the entire state, 462 municipalities in 67 different counties that have the ability to exercise these wide-ranging extraterritorial jurisdictions well outside their municipal limits. This will start to put a curb to that immediately, and within 24 months really make a significant change in that. And then from a policing standpoint, will work its way out over time.
Okay. Just quickly, the medical marijuana bill and our resolution about being able to use hydroxychloroquine, what's happening with the medical marijuana bill?
The medical marijuana bill is in the House. They took the unusual step of putting it through two separate House committees, both Judiciary and Health. which I understand the merits of that. I think it's made it through both of those committees in the House, and now it's got to get, you know, time on the special order calendar in the House for consideration. The Senate's passed it a number of times in the past couple of years, and it's ready to be voted up or down in the House. I think it's time to just kind of get on with it one way or the other. The hydroxychloroquine issue in the Senate is not really moving forward. The medical doctors that we have that serve, I have not gotten a real strong reception from them about hydroxychloroquine. I know there's some movement in the House about it. I'll tell you, Lou, practically, I think that as this virus gets under control,
right,
I'm not sure that there's as much urgency for it, certainly as there once was. But I think that's kind of
a moot point.
As we get to the waning days of the session, may not be as important to some folks as it
right.
at one time was. I know you've worked hard on it, and I certainly would support a resolution to that effect. It's just a matter of getting it on the floor, and I don't know that there's a big head of steam behind it, frankly.
Right. Yeah, well, I think you're right about it. It's just getting too late for it, and it is sort of overcome by events. I mean, you know, we are doing better with the distribution of the vaccine. At least it seems like we are. So, you know, Chris, I told you I'd get you off by 10:30, and I'm 1 minute over. So,
well,
I really do
appreciate coming on, and I appreciate you letting me jump on you here to get to the next meeting. But you and Lori have a great day, and thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Take care.
Thank you.
Be safe going up there tomorrow.
Thank you, Senator.
Thanks,
Chris.
Bye bye. Well, Miss Lori.
A lot of information.
A lot of information, and it has always been difficult to process what's going on in Montgomery. And even though they're only 2 hours away, the fact of the matter is they have hundreds of bills. And it's sort of like this big funnel. They throw all this stuff in there, and then it slowly starts coming out. And at the bottom, you know, then you start seeing them adding amendments, doing this, and it's these little changes that happen in the dead of night that no one really knows about. And I don't know what the solution to this is. Allison is the project that they have where all you have to do is go online, and in fact, if you Google ALISON Alabama Legislature, maybe we could do that right now and just put it up on the Facebook so people could take a look at it. But the bottom line is, even Allison is way behind. I mean, things move so rapidly.
What is Allison?
It is an automated liaison system so that you can check to see the status of the various bills that have been filed.
Interesting. How do you spell it again?
ALISON. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll look into that.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's something that it's a helpful tool for, you know, for interested parties to keep on top of what is going on in the state legislature. But my point is that even though they try to maintain that kind of, you know, real-time accountability, it's insufficient because the system is so bogged down in deal making, the sausage making, that they can't keep up with it.
Allison stands for Alabama Legislative Information System Online.
There you go.
If you type in Allison, follow it with the word Alabama.
Yeah.
If you're Google searching, then you'll see Alabama legislation. Click on that.
Yeah. So here again, we've got a minute to go. And actually, I'm going to be on time today, which is amazing.
Okay. Mark it on the calendar.
Look out. Okay. So but here again, I think that these questions that have come up with Senator Elliott are worth looking into. If you go to the Common Sense Campaign website, we have an ability for you to get in touch with your legislator to ask questions about these issues. Okay. We have a planning committee meeting tonight at the original Oyster House where we're going to be talking about these issues. But I do think that the Common Sense Campaign is a good source of information so that everything that we were talking about today will be seen online and on Facebook. Maybe not right away, but by midweek you'll have an update on what's going on.
Okay.
So So here again, then, it's now 10:35. It's that cut me off time. So I really do appreciate the fact that we had Senator Elliott on. I hope that it was a good session for all of y'all to get some new information about what's happening. And I think that, God willing, we will be back next week. And, until then, y'all take care. Have a great week. See you later.
Thank you, Dr. Bye. Lou. And if you've heard part of the show but missed some, or you want to tell a friend about it, you can listen to it later, usually posted by lunchtime the day of the program, on our new website, WABF1480.com, WABF1480.com. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, including the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highways 90 and 98, and in Malbus on 181. This is WABF, now resuming our regular programming with great music and memories.
You tell me that you're leaving.